What I'm going to do is, as I'm reading the Bhagavatam, then where I'm up to, I will read, and then we can discuss. So I'm up to the 10th canto, 12th chapter. The third verse. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Krishnir Vatsar Asankhyai Tir Yuti Kritya Svavatsakam Tarayanto Palilabir Vijarus Tattahi. Along with the cowherd boys and their own groups of calves, Krishna came out with an unlimited number of calves assembled. Then all the boys began to sport in the forest in a greatly playful spirit. Purport. In this verse, the words Krishna Vatsar Asankhyatai are significant. The word Asankhyata means unlimited. Krishna's calves were unlimited. We may speak of hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions, billions, trillions, tens of trillions, and so on. When we go further to speak of numbers impossible for us to count, we're speaking of unlimited numbers. Such unlimited numbers are indicated here by the words asankhyatai. Krishna is unlimited, his potency is unlimited, his cows and calves are unlimited, and his space is unlimited. Therefore, he is described in Bhagavad Gita as Parabrahman. The word Brahman means unlimited, and Krishna is the supreme unlimited, Param Brahman. Therefore, we should not consider the statements of this verse to be mythological. They are factual, but inconceivable. Krishna can accommodate an unlimited number of calves and an unlimited measurement of space. This is neither mythological nor false. But if we study Krishna's potency with our limited knowledge, that potency will never be possible to understand. Atasri Krishna Namadi Nabhavad Grayam Indriyai Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 12.102. Our senses cannot perceive how he could keep an unlimited number of calves and cows and have an unlimited space in which to do so. But this is answered in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Evam Prabho Priyanam Cha Damnash Cha Samayasya Cha Abhachintya Prabhavatvad Atta Kinchid Nadurgatam. Sri Sanatan Goswami in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita states that since everything about Krishna is unlimited, nothing is impossible for him. It is in this sense that we have to understand this verse. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Taksurun Malitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bistam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayebhacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siadvaita Gadadhar Shivas Adi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from Shyam Ashram in Kali. Yeah, you can come close, okay. I'm sitting in the on the veranda of a, what is it called? Hacienda, hacienda, something. So beautiful, actually. Amazing. Like paradise. And we had about 40 people for the teacher training, and I taught a little bit yesterday. And now, interesting, very interesting people visiting. One young man, I guess he's 37, he takes walks with me and asks questions. His great grandfather founded the Boston Globe, worked in investments and Yale and trying a new experience. So it's a really nice time to. People are suffering, and they're suffering due to ignorance. And it's a really nice time to be people who study knowledge, because this that was Prabhupada's mission to end suffering. That's why books are the basis. Without knowledge. Any place, there's no life. Knowledge gives life. That's why all the acharyas have written books to be read, taught, and disseminated. Because without that life of knowledge, a place becomes a graveyard. That's what really gives life to a temple. When there is or an ISKCON center or any spiritual center, when there is life. And life is to conceptualize and express the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So I'm up to the story of Agasura, which is. Anyway, they're all interesting stories, and I'm trying to relish them. I try to read for a half hour in the morning, at least. It's kind of a fad. I'm also into it. I like to study deeply, but just reading and hearing. It's such a nice, the python, of course, he's the brother of Putana and Bakasura, so he's kind of upset with Krishna. But they say blood is thicker than water. I don't know if water is thick. I forgot it. But bodily relationships are part of our identity. We extend our identity to the body. There's kind of an extended selfishness. Not really so much love for those persons. Especially in the case of Agasura, but his own identity was attacked. The false ego, the conception of superiority. And when that's attacked with a person with false ego that's invested in that sense of superiority, they fight, they kill. I mean, just the example, I know on Third Street when I would visit Adi and his bed and breakfast, and it's right next to the Hell's Angels, that, yes, Hare Krishna, that bench that they were if anybody sat on the bench of the Hell's Angels or touched one of their motorcycles, there was war. So this demon, of course, you know, he's out to get Krishna, and he feels one of the ways to get Krishna is to kill the cowherd boys and devastate all of Vraj. So he's there with his, he expands into this huge python. I mean, I'm not a big snake fan, but a huge python. And this is going to be discussed. At the end, I'll discuss this purport because it's very interesting, because Prabhupada's saying this is not mythological. And there's logical reasons why it's not mythological. So the cowherd boys are you listening or? Okay, because otherwise it's distracting if there's different. I need that one mind. I know. Thank you. It's good. So the cowherd boys are looking at Agasura, this huge python, and they're thinking, you know, it's so big, maybe it's just like Disneyland or something, that there's just some playground or something. But then from the mouth of Agasura comes this bad smell, because he's a python, so he swallowed so many dead bodies are in his stomach. So he becomes, and then they understand that it's alive. But they say, well, let's have some fun and go into the mouth. The tongue is like a road. And the mouth is like caves. And we're not fearful at all, because Krishna is our friend. And Krishna will protect us. This is one of the symptoms of bhakti, symptom of faith. One of the symptoms of faith, shraddha. Shraddha, one of the symptoms of faith is I'm under the protection of Krishna, and Krishna will protect me. And therefore, anything that happens to us, we say, whatever Krishna does is best. Whatever Krishna does is best. That is the conviction of a devotee, because Krishna is God and we're his devotees. It is challenged sometimes, because there's very, very difficult things that happen. But God's purpose in this world is to make us happy. And to be happy, we have to have an inner life. And sometimes to have that inner life of happiness, the external life of control has to be diminished, has to be challenged. So that's faith. That's faith. Krishna will protect me, and therefore I will do what's right. That's a really strong exhibition of faith, because sometimes we get in conflicts with others and we feel maybe oppressed, or we may feel cheated, or we may feel, and then we have an opportunity to do something back to them, but maybe it's wrong. We may be able to say something or spread a rumor about them or tell something bad that they've done, and maybe get that advantage in that conflict. But no, we have faith in Krishna. And one type of faith in Krishna is we do what's right. We do what's dharma, which do what's in shastra. And we have that faith that dharma leads to auspiciousness. And doing what's right doesn't always make sense in terms of material advantage, material promotion, power. But we have that confidence. We do what's right, and Krishna will protect us. So the cowherd boy said, Krishna just killed Bakasura. So why not? Let's have some fun. And we'll go into the, and they march right into the mouth of the python. But the python doesn't immediately like swallow them, because he's thinking, I really want Krishna. Because it's Krishna that killed my brother Bakasura. It's Krishna that killed my sister Putana. I really want Krishna. So I'll just keep them here and Krishna will come in. And then Krishna, because Krishna is a supreme person and a person develops attachments in love. A person means they have affection for others. So Krishna loves his cowherd boys. One of the qualities of prema bhakti is Sri Krishna Karshani, that when you have love, prema, you even control Krishna. Like Krishna is known as Madan Mohan. He is the one that bewilders Cupid. But Radharani is known as Madan Mohan Mohini. The one, the bewilderer of the bewilderer of Krishna. So love controls. And if Krishna was not controlled by love, he wouldn't be the supreme person. Just like we have different relationships where we give ourselves fully to someone. But what if they don't feel any, what if they don't feel impelled to reciprocate with us? I think everyone here maybe had relationships where we're disappointed because no matter what we did, the person didn't respond. So Krishna, being the supreme person, that means controlled by love. It means Krishna is controlled by love. So he loves the cowherd boys, and he's feeling separation from them. And therefore he goes into the mouth of the demon. When he goes in the mouth of the demon, then the demigods go, oh my God, because they're all watching. What will happen to Krishna? And then Krishna says, I better do something. And he expands and expands and expands and expands. And then the demon is suffocated. And his soul leaves through the head and then comes back into Krishna, and the demon also achieves liberation. So the point that's made in the verse and the commentary in Prabhupada's purport, if Krishna entered into the demon, not out of love, but to kill the demon, and the demon achieve liberation, then what is the destination of a devotee who brings the holy name into his heart through his ears out of love? What will be our destination? Beautiful. If we can hear about Krishna and chant about Krishna, out of love, then what will be our destination? Now, here in today's purport is also a very interesting point, because it says here that unsankyatai, Krishna was with, what happens is Krishna wants to have a picnic. So he wants to leave early, right? Not to eat at home that day, but to go out with his friends. So they blow conch shells, his friends come with their calves, because at this particular time, this is still called Bal Leela. Krishna is not yet 6 years old. So only gets calves, because you can't go far with the calves. When he's six, Boganda, he gets the cows and he goes out into the forest. Even though the parents just were resisting that, like, so much out of love. They just didn't want Krishna to go. But the calves is okay. Okay, take care of the calves. You go nearby. But here it says when Krishna went out, there were unlimited calves. And Prabhupada said, what does unlimited mean? It means more than tens of trillions. And Prabhupada said, do you believe that? He says, with God, anything is possible. He has inconceivable potency. Our problem in understanding God is we try to understand God by our logic that is based on the cause and effect of this world, how this world moves. So that's logic for us. Based on the laws of nature, we say thing is logical. I open my hand, something drops to the floor because there is a law of gravity. And therefore anything in this world that we let go of will fall down. So it's logical that if you have something in your hand and you put it out of your hand, it will fall. Logic works under the laws of nature, but God is not under the laws of nature. He can do anything he wants. That's the nature of God. So and that's described. That's a very important point to understand Krishna. That he's inconceivable potency. And therefore, just by our logic, we'll never approach Krishna. Because it will not be logical according to the way we think in the world. Just like I give a seminar, Can God Be Blue? A study of Krishna. So I began, can God be blue? God can be any, if there is a reason that God is blue, he's not God. Because that means there's something that's causing his nature that's above him. So can God be blue? God can be anything he wants. And therefore, we can only understand God fully when God reveals himself to us. That's even a principle in this world. No one can know you unless you reveal yourselves to them. And why will you reveal yourself to someone? Only in love. So love is the abhideya. Abhideya tattva means the means of realizing the absolute truth. Is bhakti. Because you can only understand the absolute truth if the absolute truth is inspired to reveal himself to you. And the absolute truth will only be inspired to reveal himself to you out of love. Not by the mundane senses. Pantastu koti Satavatsara sampagamyo vayor atapi manaso munipungavanam. You may travel by the speed of mind for millions and millions of years, and you won't approach the lotus feet of Krishna. That's why when Akura, the great devotee of Krishna, was finally able to go. He waited for 12 years in Mathura. And then somehow or other, by Ati Anugraha, inconceivable mercy, Kamsa, the greatest demon, sent him to get Krishna. So he was on the chariot and he was saying, today I'm going to see Krishna. I'm going to bow down to those lotus feet, which even the great jnanis cannot approach, even the feet of Krishna. So Krishna has inconceivable potency. And that's the first principle of understanding God. That you can't define him simply by logic. Tadejati, tadnaijati, tadure, tadvantike, tadantarasya sarvasya, tadusara. He walks, he doesn't walk. He's near, he's far. He's inside and out. He has inconceivable potency. So, and that is logical. That God has inconceivable potency. That is reasonable. Sometimes people, they get hung up on the origin of the living entity, the jiva. Where did the jiva come from? Most philosophical systems in India don't really deal so much with that subject, origins. Because how can you talk about an event in terms of an event in terms of God? God, by definition, is above time. How can we understand something that's beyond time? God is not subject to time. Just like we see in Vrindavan, that in the morning, Krishna would go to Govardhan Hill, or he'd go to the Jamuna, and the places seem so far away, etc. But it's not like that. God's will is an absolute fact. If he wants to be someplace, he's there. Time does not rule God. So that means God is above time. It means he's above past, present, and future. It means every event in the spiritual world is always happening. Like there's a time that Radha met Krishna. It's a beautiful pastime. But can there ever be a time where Krishna and Radha weren't eternally united? And therefore, Prabhupada, I was listening to tape, gives such a beautiful example. He gives the example of the sun, where it's simultaneously in time. The sun is simultaneously in one place and every place at the same time. Like right now, I'm here in Kali and it's like 8:30. So it's 8:30, that's a reality. But is the sun not also at noon? Is the sun also not at midnight? So that's like a mundane example. So in the same way, there's the spiritual world, there are events, but you can't say that they're ruled by time. Like Krishna kills the Kali serpent, but then it's not history. It's eternally happening. So that's the spiritual world. And therefore people ask about origins. It's a very difficult question, because how can you say when? Like an event in the spiritual world. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, you can't understand these things by the dirt of words. How can you say when? At a particular time. Time doesn't exist in the spiritual world. Like when we think of God, you know, material scientists, they say that things began. And before that, there was nothing. That's inconceivable. Doesn't make sense. But also, how do you understand that God is eternal? And it goes back and it has no beginning. Okay, somehow I'm going to read on because that's, I'll just read a little bit. Although all these boys were already decorated by their mothers with ornaments of kacha, gunja, pearls, and gold, when they went into the forest, they further decorated themselves with fruit, green leaves, bunches of flowers, peacock feathers, and soft minerals. So in the spiritual world, people try to look beautiful out of love. Krishna's name is Keshava. It means many things, but one thing it means that one who likes to have beautiful hair. And they say that Krishna spends a lot of time in the mirror making his hair very beautiful. But why? Because it gives pleasure to his devotees. So there's all this sensuous experience in the world, in the spiritual world. There's all this beauty in the spiritual world. But the consciousness is love. So they're looking very beautiful. And their mothers are dressing them very beautiful. Why? Because to give pleasure to Krishna. Because beauty is an expression of love. When you try to please someone, you offer the best. You offer the best to someone. So this is how we understand the concept of Radha. We understand the concept of Radha. We have to understand that happiness, love, and beauty. Radha is Ladini Shakti, the pleasure potency. So what does that mean? When you have love, what is pleasure? It's happiness. What is happiness? Happiness is pleasure. No, wait. Pleasure is happiness. That's real happiness, is pleasure. And when you want to please someone, you offer the best. That's why Radha is so beautiful. Because she's love personified. So the cowherd boys here, their mothers have decorated them and they have pearls and gold and it's so beautiful. And they go to the forest and out of love, they further decorate themselves. They maybe get some like grapes and put it on their cap and flowers and peacock feathers. All the cowherd boys used to steal one another's lunch bags. When a boy came to understand that his bag has been taken away, the other boys would throw it further away to a more distant place. And those standing there would throw it still further. When the proprietor of the bag became disappointed, the other boys would laugh. The proprietor would cry, and the bag would be returned. Anyway, what I'm going to do now, because somehow or other, I don't talk when there's nothing to say. Please, you're more than welcome. Actually, on Sunday, I always give a class on the internet from people around the world to listen. Yeah. Yeah, I'll give you that if you want. Very good. Yeah, many things like that. So I'll just give you some coming attractions. On Wednesday, I'm going to give a seminar. When I'm here in Cali, I give one seminar for outside, not outside people, but the congregation, and at a general topic. So it's going to be, I'm going to give you the outline of the talk. You'll understand. Three keys to inner fulfillment. So basically, I'm going to start, I'm going to ask people a question, because it's always good to get the audience active. So the question I'll give the audience, I'm going to give you the outline, and the details will be on Wednesday. The question I'm going to give the audience is, shouldn't that be open at this time? Okay. Durita, my English, you're understanding?
Yeah, of course.
Wonderful, that's great. Okay, so this is basically the outline. I'm going to ask a question, because when you ask a question, the audience, rather than be passive, becomes active. So I'm going to ask them to fill in the question, I will be happy when. Then I'm going to explain to them that you have two answers. I'll be happy when I change the world, or when I change myself. Myself. You can become happy. So these are the two types of faith people have. I'll be happy when I change the world to conform to my desires. I will be happy when I change myself to conform to the world. So that when your happiness is to change the world, there's three problems. One, to be happy in that way, to conform the world to your desires, to be happy in that way, you have to be the controller. But we're not. What?
Never.
But we try. We try, but we become frustrated because the world doesn't move our way. It doesn't move that way for Bill Gates, for Donald Trump, for anyone. Buenos dias. I guess the audience here must be impressed with my language skills here. It's interesting because there's a joke. I have a little audience here, but many people are coming now. The joke is, what do you call a person who speaks two languages? Bilingual. What do you call a person that speaks three languages? Trilingual. Many languages. Polyglot. One language. American. So I'm really trying. I have this Dewey lingo, and I try. I try to give the people listening just a scene. I'm sitting on the couch in this beautiful veranda. I mean, it's the way they build these buildings with wood and brick and the gardens. And it's, you know, a lot of people are coming now for our teacher training. And some people are sitting here. So the first problem is we're not the controllers. So if our happiness is controlling the world, we're always going to be frustrated. And again, I always make the disclaimer, happiness is inner. We do are concerned with the world, but not as the goal, but to make us peaceful, to change our hearts. So it's not that we don't do anything. It's not that we neglect our health, or we don't get a job, or we don't take care of our family. But it's just not the ultimate objective. The ultimate objective is spiritual. It's changing the heart. So the second reason, let's say we can get what we want. Some people, they say, are born with a silver spoon in their mouth. They have wealth. They have so many things. There are people that are very wealthy, and they have many beautiful relationships with the opposite sex. and they're very powerful and they have so many things. But the second thing is, if it's temporary, it still won't be satisfying. And then even if it wasn't, it's not real happiness. Because real happiness is internal. Real happiness changes the heart. And then I want to discuss what real happiness is. There's and which is also an interesting discussion, which I don't think I can go into right here. I'm probably going to have to end the class in about 4 or 5 minutes because there's a lot of things going on here and we can't. But what I'm going to do is what I'm going to show is and through a yogic perspective is that what happiness is, it's not something that comes to you. It's something that's within you. And that the purpose of yoga and to purify the mind is to be able to see that and feel that. That's what happiness is. And then what I'd like to show is practically, and I listened to a seminar from Vaisheshika Prabhu, and he used these three things, but I have my own take on them. I want to show practically for people three things they can do in the world to clarify their consciousness and experience inner joy. I'm going to talk a lot about gratitude. And because I'm going to talk about gratitude, keeping the environment simple, and attentiveness. And I'm going to discuss those three things as practical things we do in the world that can clarify the mind and give us a perception into the soul. For example, gratitude. Unless you have gratitude, then you'll hanker and lament. You'll think what I want, what I should get, and what I've lost. And that activates the mind, the material mind. Gratitude brings you to the present. Gratitude brings you to the present. And it gives you a perception of the self. We speak also about attentiveness. Because what's inside of us comes from what we're focused on. You want to change your mind, it depends what you're focused on. Because what you're focused on will come to you. Voltaire, the French philosopher, said, that which you appreciate comes to you. What you're appreciating, what you're focusing on will come to you. And then happiness is defined as contentment. Happiness is what your content is. What's inside, not what's outside. So what comes inside? What is your contentment? What is the content of your consciousness? It's what you're focused on. And especially relationships. Because the proper relationships satisfy the heart. They've done elaborate studies that even in health, the main factor in one's life in terms of their health is not diet. It's not diet. It's not exercise, although they're important. It's the quality of your relationships. So attentiveness Buenos dias. Just okay. It is the quality of your relationships. And you can't have quality relationships unless you're attentive to people, unless you focus. And of course, it's the quality of people. Anyway, it's right now going to become too distracting for me to continue the class. It's, you know, the medium and then just people coming and buenos dias and buenos dias and say hello. And I've got a few more words than that. I'm actually trying. I can do broken things and get around a bit, but I think there'll be a breakthrough this year. Okay. Anybody like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Lee.
Okay. I heard Lee. I heard Tota Gopinath. Who else?
Thank Bri. You so much for Hare the Krishna. Class, Maharaj.
Bri, Tota Gopinath. Anybody else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj.
Hey, Jai Nitai. Hare Bo. Who else?
Hare Bo.
Hare Bo, Maharaj. It's Janine.
Janine, okay. A few more?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. It's Sri Rupa.
Sri Rupa. Hare Bo. We're going to have our Bhakti immersion. I'm going to give you the dates soon in case you can come. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. Bring along some friends. Yeah, anybody else? About the immersion is the 16th to the 18th of August, in case anybody's listening. Anybody else?
Hare Krishna Gumaraj, this is Kishori Radha.
Where is Priya?
She's playing flag football right now.
I'm crushed.
And she.
I'm crushed.
She's crushed too. We didn't realize that she listened to the first half on our drive here, but she missed the last half. I'll have her listen to the class.
No, it's okay. I just had such high expectations for her. Okay.
I know. She was crushed too.
Anybody else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Gail here.
Okay, Gail. A few more?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Sugandalaja.
Thank you. Hare Bo. You know, one day, anybody that's there, I really like you, you know, to see the place here. It's just an amazing when you see all these people come in. And we had a reunion of the people that went to the tour. I saw them in Vrindavan. They just, people here are. They're so nice, the people here. It's just, there's something about, I know other people say, Colombian people are very nice. So there was a tour, and they had a reunion of the tour, and everybody came. And I just saw the happiness among the people, the joy. So I just spoke a little bit of community. I talk about this with this common interest, not separate interest. And how, you know, you enter into groups with separate interest, then there's competition, there's intimidation, there's envy. There's so many things that block the heart. So when people actually have a family or a community that really has that sense, it's such an experience for them. And what to speak of the shared experience being God and God touching their hearts and having that experience to share. And when you come back to a place like this, who else are you going to share it with but those people? Because no one else had that experience. They can't imagine what it is to be in India and the kind of people you meet and the kind of experiences you have and what touches your heart. And then when you're with other people that have shared that experience and you can be vulnerable in a good way because you have so much confidence with those people. Anyway, I'm going to go now. I somehow was able to do the class, and we should be able to have it every Sunday while I'm here. But right now, there's just too much distraction. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.